This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show with Nigel Rothband, Sarah Messenger and me, Charlie Hawkins. You're listening to Love Sport Radio, and of course we're joined by the Man City Show podcast. What a show we have in store for you over the next hour. 60 minutes of just City and City only. What a delight it will be, especially with the way they are playing, Nigel, at the minute. The 5-1 thrashing of Atalanta and the 3-0 victory on the weekend against Aston Villa. That Wolves defeat feels like a long, long time ago, and it also feels like a turning point in the season. We're going to be talking about those two games and then look into that double clash with Saints, because we play them in the Carabao Cup and then Southampton again on the weekend. And let me just tell you, the Saints FC podcast have already tweeted in. They're tuned in, so they're going to be listening to what you two have to say about them. But they're saying Nigel and Sarah should be worried, because we're looking forward to see how we're going to spin this one. A few jests, I'm guessing, from Southampton.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Charlie? Because it can go one of two ways, can't it? This, of course, you know, it could well be that after a 9-0 thrashing by Leicester City, they're going to get their act together. They're going to get themselves sorted, and we could be on. You know, we could get a backlash from that. Alternatively, they could be so demoralised that probably the last place they want to come to is the Etihad Stadium twice in 4 or 5 days. Mm. And it could go either way, I guess. But we talked about this on our podcast this week, and our view is that we'd like to think, with the firepower we've got, even with our defensive frailties and with the depth of squad that City have got, you'd like to think that we should be able to win against Southampton.
Yeah, I'd like to think that. Let's get Sarah involved as well, because I'll be honest, even if you win your last game, the fault of playing City twice back to back, it doesn't bode well, does it, Sarah?
I think our friends in Southampton are a bit more worried about playing us than we are about playing them. I mean, as Nigel says, they could. I suspect they're not going to play as badly as they did on Friday, but I think if City will win both games, and the scoreline will depend how quickly City score. If they score early, I think we'll tonk them in both games.
Sarah's already giving out predictions. She's not even reeling you in. She's going straight for it with the bold predictions. We're going to come to that game and do a full preview. Let's start, though. Let's take it back just that little bit. Let's start with the thrashing of Atalanta. 5-1, five-star performance, Sterling hat-trick. It couldn't have gone any better. Although, Nigel, it didn't start that way. 1-0 down. Did you fear the worst at that point?
I don't think City ever looked like they were going to lose that game. I mean, Atalanta are scoring. I think they're the top scorers in their league. They finished fourth last season. I think they're about fourth again this year. We didn't know much about them coming into this game. Haven't won a game, of course, in any of the group stage games. But you go 1-0 down in Europe with the sort of defensive frailties we've got, the injuries we've got, you do start to question it. But actually, realistically, I think we felt they were always going to pull that one out of the bag. And of course, we turned it around. And Raheem Sterling, I mean, what a season he's having. And to score, was it a hat-trick? Was it 11, 12 minutes or something? 11-minute hat-trick. Absolutely outstanding. We'll probably come on to Phil Foden as well, who looks great, but showed a little bit of naivety towards the end. But yeah, I don't think we're really in any danger of winning that game. And it was comfortable in the end.
Yeah, we'll talk about Foden's maybe immaturity, you know, still to get in those big game moments, the big game players. It's going to take him a little bit of time. Pep will obviously be the perfect man to coach that out of him. But Sarah, where do we start to talk about Sterling? Because I spoke about it with Paul, who was on last week's show, and I'm at a loss for words to describe him. He's obviously on the long list. He's been nominated for Ballon d'Or, but he's just some player, isn't he? I mean, City fans, they must be just... The fact that they, you know, they get to call him one of their own, he performs for your team, he puts on that shirt, you get to see him week in, week out. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
He is. He's brilliant. And it's been great watching how much better he's got over the last two or three seasons. You know, he scores goals now that he wouldn't have scored two or three years ago. He makes goals as well. So, and it's a combination of his pace, his finishing has improved, but also some of the passes he makes that have led to goals. There was a lovely dink pass to Silva last week that, you know, has got a lot of plaudits. So as a player, he's improved dramatically. And I think, for me, one of the things that's really important about Sterling is his confidence. He had a lot of that skill when he played at Liverpool, but I don't think he really believed in himself as a top-quality, potentially world-class footballer. I think he does now.
I feel like Pep has really harnessed that ability. He's taken him to the next level. Not only that, he's become a real leader off the pitch. And we're seeing it now, you know, not carrying this team, but, you know, he's willing his teammates on. Even, I know we're talking about the Atalanta game, but he missed a chance against Villa on the weekend. He was actually literally kicking himself because he felt like in that moment, you know, even though when City were 2-0 up and cruising, he should have done better in that moment. And this is what you want to see, isn't it, Nigel?
And I think what's interesting, Charlie, as well, is the fact that Pep has played him, and I know we're talking about Europe, but he's played 8 out of the 9 Premier League games. Mm. He started 8. So Pep sees him as absolutely crucial. We're going to rotate the squad. We're in 4 competitions. We've got a number of injuries, as we've said. So Pep has given him that vote of confidence. And there's no question Pep will have helped his game, I'm sure. But I think Raheem Sterling has got to take a lot of the credit for the improvements that he has made. And that, what was it, $44 million that we paid to Liverpool is looking good value for money now, isn't it, just a few years on? And in terms of goals, I don't know if you realise, he scored 36 goals in the last calendar year, which is phenomenal. And he scored, what, 25 last year? He scored 13 already this year. He's on track potentially for Sergio Aguero not to be our leading goal scorer this year, potentially, which will be a bit of a turn up for the book. He's on fire at the moment. And as you said before, to see him put on that sky blue shirt and turn out every week is fantastic. He's playing superbly.
It's almost ridiculous to think it's only 3 years ago that he was every England fan hated him. They all thought he was terrible. You know, the grief and abuse he was getting. Overrated. They wouldn't have trusted him to score if he was one-on-one with the keeper. It's dramatic what's happened to him over the last 3 years.
Yeah, sloppy, not clinical enough, doesn't take his chances, terrible at finishing when he's one-on-one, and now Nigel just ruled off the stats. And you mentioned that he's chasing Aguero, and we can mention many players. You know, we haven't even covered De Bruyne and Silva. You know, it's a wealth of options that Man City have to choose from. When they are attacking on all four fronts, they can rotate like that. But let's keep it on the Atalanta game and let's talk about Foden, because obviously Guardiola says, you know, he wouldn't sell him for $450 million. He's a man that needs more minutes. He gave him those more minutes, and obviously a little bit of naivety right at the end there, Nigel.
Let's just start with Foden as a player first of all. And a lot of people have criticised Pep and he should have gone out. You know, he should be playing for an Everton, if you like. He'd be playing week in, week out for them. But Pep has said, look, you know, bide his time. He's playing every week with world-class players, training with them, working with probably the best manager on the planet, and I think he's handled it superbly. And when he comes on, he looks the finished article. He's 19 years of age and he looks so mature. He's got the vision, he's got the touch, he scored goals, he looks absolutely fantastic. That having been said, and it's probably not a very popular view, but I wasn't surprised when he was booked by the referee for the first challenge. He pulled the guy back. It was a promising attack.
Yep.
Not many City fans probably would agree with me, but you know, as a referee, I can understand why he was put.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to be careful in the future, Nigel.
There you go. So I can understand why he cautioned him. And then, with us, you know, winning the game with no real danger, to do what he did show a lack of maturity. And I suppose it's easy for me as sitting here as a City fan criticising Phil Foden. But that was disappointing. And I guess Pep will have been disappointed. I'm sure Phil Foden will have been disappointed as well. But, showed a little bit of naivety. But to be fair, Ilkay Gundogan, who is not wet behind the ears and is in his 30s, did exactly the same thing at the weekend against Villa as well, of course. So it can happen, and that was stupid as well.
Sometimes they do it on purpose. A little bit of gamesmanship as well. I know Pep is a big fan of gamesmanship. He won't obviously mind that. But with the Foden one, you never want to see a player, you know, show those moments of madness or get sent off. And it was second yellow. It wasn't like it was a straight red. But, you know, you almost not want these moments, but you can afford them when you are 5-1 up and cruising, because he's going to learn from that, isn't he, Sarah? You know, it's a long career ahead of him, and he can take that lesson with him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want it, but isn't it, you're never going to go through your career and not get a daft sending off. So I'd rather he had it when he's 19, learns from it, and hopefully we don't have too many of them going forward, rather than, you know, it becomes a feature of his game. His excitement, I think, at playing and how well he played probably contributed to that sense, right, I'm going to stop him. Oh, hang on, I've stopped him in the wrong way.
Yeah, you mentioned there, and talking of the game against Atalanta, you said how well they've started in Serie A, because people might look at that Champions League table and go, oh, Atalanta, this is a walkover city. And I know that scoreline will say that, but they are going well in Serie A. I mentioned this on last week's show. These aren't, you know, mugs, you know, they're no pushovers by no means. And that scoreline, maybe people would think that of Atalanta, but they certainly aren't. I know it's the back-to-back game now, you have to play them again, but we know how important this Champions League is for Pep. We know how important it is for City, as are all trophies and the competitions they are in. But it does help when you put on a performance like that after the international break, and we know what happened before. It's the start of everything, isn't it, Nigel? Because it kick-forms the start in the league, you know, it carries it on in the Champions League, and now if they qualify slightly earlier, they can rest and rotate that little bit more.
Yeah, and it's all about, people talk about momentum as well, don't they, of course. You know, you lose a game, you know, it kind of, you take three or four steps back. I think you want to be able to progress early, as you say, maybe rest a few players. We're playing in four competitions. We've got the Carabao Cup this week. We're still in with a shout at the Premier League. I don't think we've written that off just yet. Mm-hmm. You know, the FA Cup.
Nearly.
We'll come
if
on to
Liverpool.
That.
Yeah.
So the Champions League this year. Yeah, of course. It's that monkey on our back, isn't it? People are saying that it's the one trophy Pep hasn't won in England. I think if you talk to most City fans, I think three Premier League titles is probably still the priority, to be honest. But yeah, we would love to progress well and do well in the competition. So to win 5-1 against a team who are riding high in Serie A, it's a good result, because there's no mugs in this competition. You don't get to the Champions League, this stage of the Champions League, without being a half decent side.
Yeah,
they beat Udinese 7-1 at the weekend, having gone 1-0 down. So they, like you say, they're no mugs. They're good. They're a decent team.
I'm glad you brought it up, Sarah, because if you believe everything you read on social media, everyone believed that when Spurs or City beat, you know, Red Star Belgrade and beat Atalanta, that these sides are just absolutely the no marks of Europe, and they're certainly not that. If you're in and you've qualified for the Champions League, you better believe you're a good side, because there are good sides who are playing in the Europa League that can't get in the Champions League. So whether it's 5-1 or 1-0, a win in Europe is very, very good. I want to quickly talk about Fernandinho, because obviously we know what happened in the game against Villa, but he gave away the penalty. It just seems like there's a few moments for him where it's just not happening. I don't know if it's fair to say. We're talking about Foden's immaturity. I know it's unlucky to concede a penalty, but Fernandinho's, he's having a couple of tough moments himself at the minute, Nigel.
Fernandinho is the most underrated player in the Premier League. Fernandinho is a fantastic footballer. He's versatile. I think he's been underrated. I think people who don't see him week out don't understand and recognise the contribution he's made to that side, winning
well,
all the trophies.
Well, it's evident when he's not playing, isn't it?
Absolutely. He is a fantastic footballer. Yeah, okay. So he's been used as an emergency centre-back. He's not done badly. But yeah, I suppose he gave away a penalty in a 5-1 win. And I suppose you could argue he dived in a bit. But listen, it's going to happen, isn't it? But do not underestimate how good Fernandinho is as a footballer. He's magnificent. He's one of my favourite City players.
He's one of his favourite City players. Well, we're going to be talking about the game with Villa next, and where Fernandinho did get sent off. And if it was down to Pep, he said if we play like how we did in the first half, we might be relegation favourites. But I'm not sure if I quite believe that.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Have you had enough of extortionate rises when you renew your insurance? You could be saving big money by switching to a cheaper deal. A spokesman said.com compares all the best deals on car and home insurance to find you the one that saves the most cash. Bring down the price of your insurance and stop wasting your hard-earned cash. Go to a spokesman said.com and start the saving today.
With a spokesman said.com, fighting for you, saving you money.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger of the Man City Show podcast. We were just discussing the 5-1 thrashing of Atalanta in the week. Man City very well placed to qualify for that Champions League group as they now go. They travel to Italy. We'll be talking about that game. But let's turn our attention to the game on the weekend, because for me, before that international break, losing to Wolves 2-0 at home, it just feels like something has turn, not a watershed moment, but something has changed. They feel more focused. They really are driving on now, Man City. And again, another professional performance, just like the one against Palace, this time against Aston Villa 3-0. Wasn't always the case. Pep wasn't happy with that first half display. I watched it. I mean, he's a much harsher critic than I am, but understandably so, Nigel. But overall, where was your thoughts on it?
Well, yeah, like I am every week, I was there as well. And that first off, it wasn't a convincing performance. Mm. You know, we weren't as fluid. We're not quite at the same level of maybe the two previous seasons. And there have been games this season where we've lost games, as we know, against Wolves and Norwich, where we haven't been that fluid, and they've managed to nick a goal. And I think it could have been very different if that had happened. Fortunately, we went in at 0-0, and certainly the halftime pep talk, if you like, worked. And you know, I think the clearance from Edison and the leap from Gabriel Jesus, I think he's what, 9 inches shorter than Mings, and he managed to nick it from him, and Sterling, who we've been talking about, nipped in and gave us a fantastic start 20 seconds in. So it wasn't a great first half, but I think second half we started to play the sort of football that we're used to seeing, and I think also we're maybe not as clinical in front of goal either first half. I mean, you know, Gabriel Jesus had a couple of chances. Clearly Aguero was rested again. So not all was right, but again, I'm not quite sure if Villa quite had the firepower to beat City on the day anyway, and I never felt as though we were in danger of losing the game. But that having been said, bit disappointing at half time with the whole performance, but put right in the end.
Yeah, maybe not at their clinical best, but maybe when you know your opponent isn't offering much, you know you're going to have more chances in a game. City always have so many chances in a game, but if Jesus takes that chance or they score another Sierra, maybe they're slightly more relaxed. Was Pep being harsh there? How did you see it?
Well, I think Nigel's right. It wasn't a great first half performance, but I've got a bit of a theory about City, which is in these sorts of home games where inevitably we have sort of 70-odd% possession.
At least.
Mostly the teams play defensively. They might have different shapes, but they play defensively. I almost think that if City score in the first 10 or 15 minutes, it's almost like they're away. They relax, and potentially we're 2-3, 4-0 up at half-time. If we don't score in the first 10, 15 minutes, you almost get a sense that they're like, hang on a minute, this isn't working. And it almost takes them to the half-time team talk from Pep while he tells them what they need to do to get going again, to then come out and win in the second half. I mean, it's a little bit simplistic, but there is something in that, I think, that if we score early, it dramatically affects the way we play for the rest of the game.
Sarah, let me tell you, I love nothing more. We found out that today Nigel was an ex-ref. Well, I did. Let me tell you, I love a conspiracy theory.
A current ref.
Sorry, Nigel.
Come on.
Oh, it's our first debut.
He's not that old.
Yeah, and I've thrown it away already. It was all going so swimmingly. Well, let me tell you, I was going to say, I love a conspiracy theory, Sarah. So whenever you've got one, please let us know. But let's talk about the game then, because obviously after you'll not be pleased to know, but I'll give you some information. It's the Aston Villa Fan Show, and I've got to speak to them and what we're going to speak about. And obviously they'll be talking about the game from their perspective, 3-0, and they are, I don't want to say seething, but not happy at all with the VAR. They felt like the goal should have been ruled out, and it's a huge talking point for them, because if Silva touched it, then he is offside, so how can the goals who give it to Silva, because then he is conflicting with the play. As a former, as a current ref, Nigel, I've just done it twice, 2 yellow cards, I'm off, I've done a Foden, I'm showing my naivety there, but let's talk about it, because from their point, they're fuming, Nigel.
What's interesting, because when you're in the ground, of course, which I was, you have not got a clue what's going on.
They are terrible for the punters.
And I haven't seen it back on, I'm being honest, I haven't had time to even watch it back on television. So obviously I've read about it on social media and seen different comments. But it's one of the things about VAR. So as a supporter sitting, I think there's something like a 4-minute delay.
It's terrible.
And as far as we're concerned, De Bruyne just went straight in off from where I was sitting. Looked so De Bruyne had scored, and we just sit there not understanding what the hell's going on. Mm. So that's a separate issue. And I think, if Silva got a touch on it. It sounds as though Sterling then was in an offside position, certainly in the eye line of the goalkeeper, and therefore probably could have been chalked off. Is it actually going to change the result of the game? I don't think so. But I can understand. We've had VAR decisions go against us, one or two, I seem to remember, in the last 12 months or so, and it happens. I'm not a big VAR fan. We don't need to get into that now. In fact, I hate it with a passion. But that's a different subject for a different day, I suspect. So, yeah, it wasn't going to change the outcome of the game, but I can understand if they're not very happy about it.
Yeah, Sarah, where do you stand on the whole VAR then? Because Nigel's made his thoughts very clear.
Well, we've had some interesting conversations about VAR over the past few months. I was a fan, or at least was thought that it would make a difference to the game in a positive way. What it's turned into is a complete farce. So even people like me who thought that VAR was good for football and would eliminate what you might call the more ridiculous decisions, what it's done is it's actually added to the number of ridiculous decisions, and it is affecting people's enjoyment of the game. Actually, if David Silva touched it, I didn't see a deviation on the ball. So, we're now arguing about pernickety little things that didn't really dramatically affect whether that ball went in the net or not, as opposed to looking at the quality of the game or talking about great goals that are scored. And I think so. I'm at the moment, unless it dramatically improves, I think VAR has not been the success that people thought it would be.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It was meant to eradicate clear and obvious error. Little moments like this that are being lost, especially for the fans that are in the stadium. That does bring me weirdly. I want to talk about something. It seems like the stadium wasn't full of fans. There's a noticeably, when I was watching the game, empty seats on the stadium. I don't know if that's to do with the early kickoff or Man City have just played in the week. And it's maybe I've noticed it from a few games now. Is there something else going on? Are the fans staying away or prices too high? Or, you know, Nigel, is there an answer for this?
Well, I discussed it with my mate who sits next to me at every home game. We got season cards together. And I think we came up for three reasons, I suppose. Number one, the early kickoff does mean that it doesn't suit everybody. I think the second issue is it's half term as well, so it may well be that a number of people are away, and the third one, you know, it's live on the box, and we're playing a lot of games. Games are coming thick and fast, as we've said. So, but that having been said, we've built on top of one of our stands. We've expanded the stadium, and it holds over 50,000. If you look at City's gates, they're up there with other teams. We don't necessarily fill the stadium every single week. Our success, I suppose, has only come really in the last sort of 10 years or so, and it might take a little bit of time for City to get the sort of gates that other teams have maybe had success over the last 30-40 years. Might take us a little bit of time to get there. It doesn't worry me particularly. This whole thing about the empty ad and empty seats doesn't bother me in the slightest. You know, we've got a hardcore of fans who come every week.
They've got a great travelling away support, Man City. I was
going to say, and when we go away, I have to say that the Villa fans made a fantastic noise yesterday. The away fans, their support was superb yesterday, and you've got to give them credit for that. You know, even when they were behind, they sang the hearts out till the end. I think we have got a bit of an issue, but it's very difficult for clubs, and I don't think City are alone in this. I think it's very difficult to get that balance between satisfying the corporate support that you need the financial backing, you need those sort of people to come. There'll be a certain percentage of people who enjoy sitting in a box and having a nice prawn sandwich before the game, and then other people who want to stand behind the goal, and all shades between, and it's difficult getting that balance right, and maybe City haven't quite got it right just yet.
It really is. Also, now could be completely wrong with this, and you can both tell me, but I'll ask it to you, Sarah. Is there a touch of maybe that City have been spoiled in the last few years? You know, European football every year, top talent, big games, and then when it is the Aston Villa, it's trouble. Because I say this from my own experience of Arsenal, they was always in the Champions League, and then the league games would suffer because people would go, oh, I'll watch this one at home, it's West Brom or Bournemouth, and it's no disrespect to West Brom or Bournemouth, and those games would suffer because people would want to go in the week to Atlanta or, you know, the bigger games. Maybe City, because of they're doing so well, are they suffering maybe of that, or completely wrong there?
I think there's a little bit in that, although most City fans of my age and older will say that there can never be such a thing as being too spoilt. We're making the most of it, having lived with years of agony. And I think one of the things that irritates me a bit about this debate is that, you know, there's a big question about ticket prices, which, you know, a number of supporters of from different clubs have raised and about how being priced out of the game. I think there is something about the timing of kickoffs and so on and so forth. There is something about if you've got three home games in a week, a lot of fans can't afford to go to three home games in a week, so you're inevitably going to pick and choose them. But it's also the final point I'd say is it's this insinuation that somehow you're not proper fans if you've got an empty seat next to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a load of all rubbish. I could find a picture from every single Premier League club of a game where you didn't fill it and didn't sell out every seat. It's silly. You know, the fans of every club in the Premier League and all the other leagues love their teams. And the fact that you've got an empty seat next to you doesn't really, to me, doesn't say anything about the club at all.
I completely agree. What nonsense. It's going so well. I've called Nigel, a former ref, and now I've brought up the seat debate. So these two will be really glad to see me again next week. But let's keep it on the game against Villa. And I did want to talk about John Stones a little bit, because I'm a big fan of John Stones. I just feel like, has he lost his confidence? He looks a little bit short of his confidence. Has he fallen under favour with Pep? You know, you two see it week in, week out. What is the general consensus to what's happened with John Stone? Because he was a big cog, I felt, for Pep in the City domination going forward.
Yeah, and a regular England international with it, of course. And I think it's fair to say a combination of things. He has had a couple of injuries. He's out of form and was maybe dropped. It's also been said that he's had some personal issues as well, as we understand it. So certainly seeing him starting in the back four at the weekend, he did look as though he was somebody who was lacking in confidence. I think he improved throughout the game. He got better. But there's no question, I think he's lacking some confidence there. Maybe needs some game time. And with the injuries that we're picking up, maybe there's an opportunity. I mean, Otamendi didn't feature, so it looks like he's maybe ahead of Otamendi in Pep's eyes in terms of the pecking order. So we may well see him having a bit of a run in the side, and that might help his confidence. He did improve throughout the game.
Will we get to see that run, Sarah, do you think?
I think confidence is the key word here. If you look at, we just had a conversation about Sterling and the dramatic difference in the way he plays, and confidence is a massive feature of that, of Sterling's improvement. And I think, because as Nigel said, Stones has never really had that prolonged run in the team, whether it's because of injury or some other reason. If he stays in the team, we get some decent results and his confidence rises, I think we'll see what a quality player he is. It just hasn't happened enough at City yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully he can get this run now, because we talk about the injuries that City have got, especially at centre-half, you know, and obviously Kompany leaving in the season. The perfect time for John Stones to really stamp his place back on the team would be now. We're going to be talking about all the injuries and the challenge that City have in those four competitions before the next international break. We're going to be talking a little bit about that next, but we want you to get involved. So tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Do you agree with what Nigel and Sarah are saying all about Man City?
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins, on Love Sport Radio. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger of the Man City Show podcast. We were talking all things that concern City when they thrashed Atalanta 5-1 and the victory on the weekend, 3-0 to Aston Villa. And what did you make of them? You can still let us know. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. I just want to take it back to a point you made earlier, Nigel, about the title race. You said, we're still back in it then, because obviously there's been a lot of talk about Liverpool, and I've seen it and I was absolutely shocked. They thought that they had this title already won, if you would have spoke to their fans. Kid you not, it's a 38 league game season. We're only in October, but they've got it wrapped up. And now all of a sudden that tide is turning somewhat, because City, obviously, they're applying this pressure. Liverpool, not a slip up, but they got a point against United, and obviously they managed to come back against Spurs. But it feels like now we could be in for a title race that was just as thrilling as last year. What do you say, Nigel?
Well, to start talking about the title race being over in October is, of course, ridiculous.
You know, we've
had situations in the past where they were several points ahead, and City, of course, turned that one round and won that. So I don't think they need to be printing the T-shirts in Liverpool just yet.
They do like to, though.
They like to, and they've done it in the past, and you know, but I think it would be very foolish. There's a lot of football still to be played. We've still got to play them twice, of course. The first fixture's coming up in a couple of weeks' time at Anfield. So they're going to be important fixtures. But listen, they drop points against a team from just outside Manchester who play in red. They'll drop drop other points. They've not had any injuries. We're going to come on to City's injuries in a second. They've been very fortunate in that regard. Okay, I think they lost their keeper for a couple of games, but they've not had any serious injuries yet, and they've had a lot of luck along the way. Penalties, and I'm not sort of saying there's any conspiracy theories, but they've had quite a bit of luck along the way.
You leave those to Sarah's. The conspiracy theories are all Sarah's.
It's not my department. It's well above my pay grade. I will indeed leave that to Sarah. But yeah, so they've had plenty of luck, but so much football still to be played. I think it'd be foolish to start sort of predicting Liverpool's title just yet.
Well, I don't know about getting into Larkin injuries and all this, but one thing I will say where I do feel Liverpool have maybe been luckier, we know of City's squad depth. Everyone says about City that, you know, who are the teams that are going for the Premier League? Man City and then Man City 2, you know. We know their second team. Well, what is their second team? The rotation is just as strong. Whereas I don't believe Liverpool's squad has as much depth as City or anyone else. You know, if they were to lose a few key players, you know, they could become very vulnerable. I already felt that this winning run that apparently was going to go on forever was vulnerable, and they slipped up last week. But the title race, so be it. Apparently, Sarah is back on. But City, it was never off, was it?
It definitely was never off. Definitely not. I think Liverpool are desperate. Desperate to win it. And I mean, every club wants to win the Premier League, but there's almost a desperation to it. I think they feel it was an affront that they managed to only lose one game last season and get 97 points and still didn't win the Premier League. It must be their turn this year, even though it's been their turn for 30 years. But you know, everyone, I mean, it was only 2 years ago, somebody was going on about how there might need to be an inquiry into whether City were ruining football because we were running away with everything, and everyone wants the Premier League to be a title race. So we ought to want City to pull the gap back, or we ought to want Leicester to carry on playing really well and make a fight of it at the top. It is ridiculous to suggest it's over now. If the gap is as it is now, or ideally a bit less by the time, once you get into the new year, you look at the size of the gap then, and then you can start to get a sense of what might happen.
Well, let's talk about the injuries then, because Liverpool, as Nigel kindly put it, have been maybe a little bit luckier in that regard. City, not so lucky. They've had quite a few injuries and in key positions and have just managed to keep it going. Shows you the squad depth. It only highlights how strong they are, Nigel. But it has been worrying in that regard, hasn't it?
Yeah, if you think back to, and you made the point earlier, Charlie, about the fact that Kompany went and he wasn't replaced. At the time, we felt that we had a very strong squad, two players every position, and also the flexibility of other players who could then play in different positions. And Pep, of course, has got a good history of doing that throughout his career. Yeah. But when you then lose Laporte, you lose Sane. What we didn't mention about the Atlanta game, of course, Rodri got injured in that game as well. Zinchenko's just been pictured in a hospital bed with a bit of knee surgery in Barcelona. We were chatting on the Man City show earlier on that Mendy doesn't look quite fit either. So that is quite a lot of injuries in those key positions. And what it means is we're having to, already Rodri's been playing at the back, Fernandinho's playing at the back, and you know, there's talk of, well, Cancelo can also play at centre back, Walker might have to play centre back. So we're definitely got a situation where we've got key players out and we're having to compromise. And when you're in four competitions, and when you're playing in the Champions League, you know, you need your Aymeric Laporte in the side. You know, he's a key player. And I'm, you know, hopefully he's going to be back in time for that. But you lose key players like that, players like Sarno, who's hardly had a mention in the press because he's not been in the side at all this year, really. They're key players who can change games. And yet, we've got fantastic resources. We've got many, many millions of pounds in the bank. But it does mean when you lose key players like that, it's going to have an impact on the side.
Well, this is the worry, because obviously people will point to City's resources straight away. And I hate how transfer news dominates a whole season rather now than just the summer months and then the January month. People will already be quick to do it, certainly in the media. But you mentioned Walker can play at centre-back. He did very well for England, actually, in the World Cup. That is an option there, but I know Pep does prefer to play him in a position that he wants to for the system that is built there. But will you see acquisitions in January then, Sarah? Because, you know, Nigel mentioned it there, challenging on those four fronts. And if you want to keep that challenge and that momentum, which has been the key word of this show, could we see Pep and City purchase more players in January?
I think the only way you'd see purchases in January is if the right player's available at the right money. City don't panic buy.
Spoken like a true manager.
They don't, yeah. They don't panic buy. So if the right player's available at the right money, they might buy someone. And the challenge is that nearly all of the injuries that Nigel's just described, with the exception of Sane, have been to defensive players. So what we've never really been able to do this season is kind of not so much have a settled back four, but have players who have been playing quite regularly with each other. And we're definitely not moaning. City are very, City fans recognise how fortunate we are to have the owners we do and the squad that we do. So it's not about moaning, but to pretend that it doesn't affect a team to lose as many defensive minded players as we've lost is silly, because it does. Of course it affects you.
So what are the other options then, Nigel?
Well, I suppose he's got numerous options. The ones that he's talked about is, we think that Rodri and Zinchenko are not actually long-term injuries. But I think as far as, let's focus on the back four for a moment. The beauty is we do have Cancelo, who's come in, of course, who's cover for Walker. I think Walker potentially has lost a little bit of confidence and a little bit of form, and Cancelo looked superb against Villa at the weekend. He looked a really good acquisition. And then the thing at centre-back is, which is probably the area where we're going to have to compromise most. We've got some good options. We've got Fernandinho, who's only going to miss the Carabao Cup game in midweek, so he's available for the weekend. So Fernandinho will be back for that. We've already said that Rodri can play there. We've still got Stones and Otamendi, of course, as the two recognised centre-backs. Yeah. So it's not exactly a major problem. But Otamendi's been out of the side for a while. Stones, we've said before, is lacking a bit of confidence. And then at left-back, of course, we've got Mendy, who looks great going forward. We're not quite as convinced of him as a defensive wing back. Angelino, of course, came on as a sub at the weekend as well, who looks a good young prospect, so we got him. But also we've got the two youngsters as well, who I think potentially Garcia and Taylor Harwood-Bellis. I think potentially we could see them making an appearance in the Carabao Cup. So I've named a lot of players there. All of them are defenders. So it's not as if we've got nobody, but it does mean we're having to chop and change, and it's maybe not our strongest side. But all being well, Laporte, who I think is probably the best of that bunch, is going to be back in the new year when the Champions League really kicks on.
Well, hopefully, and then he can contribute there, because it will become the turn of the knockout stages. Let's quickly talk about Mendy. I know you're saying he's short of match fitness, but they were really talking him up on Match of the Day, weren't they? He's playing these little squares, he's playing these triangles, so we know he can do it. We knew he could do it anyway. Is it just a run of games now, which is what he needs, or is there something larger afoot going on?
Well, a run of games and Benjamin Mendy is not words you hear in the same sentence or haven't done for a long time. And I think that's the problem. I don't think he's played more than two games on the trot in all his time at Manchester City, which is ridiculous for a player who
started
with
that terrible injury, though.
Well, he did, true, but he's been back since then. But yeah. That's why I'm saying I don't think we've seen the real Benjamin Mendy. He was fantastic at Monaco, and he hasn't really reached his full potential yet. Going forward, he looks great. I don't know what you think, Sarah, but defensively, I've still got question marks about him as a defensive left back.
It's been a while since we've had a fullback who we thought was quite good at defending. We've got some great attacking fullbacks.
You don't normally need to defend.
Indeed, exactly. They don't need to defend. I think Mendy's had two serious injuries since he joined us, because he came back briefly and then he got pretty much, it wasn't quite the same injury, but another knee injury. He was out for months again. So that kind
and
of...
And they're huge injuries. They're not big, small injuries.
Yeah. And any player, I think, particularly a new player, if you it's interesting, if you look at quite a few of the players that City have signed in recent seasons, their first season has not been necessarily something that's caused everybody to go, wow, Silva, Bernardo Silva, Mahrez. But you look at what Bernardo Silva did last season, what Mahrez is doing this season, there's almost something about the way Pep brings them in. Rodri's perhaps an exception because he's come in and the City fans are loving him already. But I think there's something about Mendy just needs that chance now to show us what he delivered at Monaco and develop that rapport with the fans. And be confident in his knees as well.
Perfect time and opportunity to get it, because they play Southampton, who, if I'm not mistaken, seem to be shipping a few goals. So maybe Mendy and Stones can get a run for those two games and then finally hit fitness and form. We're going to be talking to Tom Parker, who can give us a perspective from Southampton. And I'm presuming that he might not be the happiest, A, at the result against Leicester 9-0, and B, at the fact that they do have to play Man City twice.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
That's right. It's time for the Opposition View. You're listening to me, Charlie Hawkins, and you're listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with Nigel Rothband and Sarah Messenger of the Man City Show podcast. And we're also delighted because now Tom Parker has joined us from the Saints FC podcast. Tom, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of your time, because I know at the minute, football, I suppose you don't really want to do a lot of talking about that after that 9-0 thrashing on Friday night to Leicester.
No, absolutely not. And I think any football fan, if you said what's the last game you'd want to play, what's the next two games you don't want to play after a 9-0 thrashing home to Leicester, is probably Man City away. So what better week ahead for a Southampton fan?
How are you feeling then, Tom? How are you? Honestly, were you at the game, incidentally, as a matter of interest?
I wasn't. I fortunately managed to miss that one. I think I think it had been coming. I mean, it sounds silly to say a 9-0 defeat at home to Leicester. Southampton have skirted on this type of result for quite a long time. We've had too many players being inconsistent at best and just not performing at worst, particularly this season. A number of the big-name players like Højbjerg, Ward-Prowse, that stepped up in the second half of last season, haven't really been there. I think maybe in a perverse way, it's a good thing to happen. I think the club has been in a lull. I don't blame the manager at all. I think he's inherited a squad that isn't too many players that simply aren't good enough on too long of contracts. We've wasted so much money in the last 2 years on big name, expensive players for us that are now out on loan or can't get near the first team. And I think maybe this was the sort of shock that the club needs to lull itself out of, probably sleepwalking towards, if not relegation, then just sort of finishing outside the relegation spots.
But we were talking on the Man City Show podcast earlier that I suppose two things could happen here. Either we're going to get a reaction from you guys, you're going to come out, see it as a kick up the backside and really turn in a performance, or you could be so demoralised that, as you said, playing the last place you want to go is the Etihad and you could get another drubbing. What's your view in terms of which way it could fall?
Well, they can't play any worse, I would hope. I think what we need to do is, it needs to take it as a real radical change in mindset. I think we need to change the squad up a little bit. I think the best really Southampton can hope for tomorrow night is that Man City put out a relatively junior team, although that would still be full of internationals and fantastic talent. But I think what you'll hopefully see from Southampton is an opportunity to kick on. I think there's too much deadwood in the team. If you look at our midfield three that have played virtually every game this season of Højbjerg, Ward-Prowse and Romeo, you'd probably only argue Romeo is the one that's covered himself in any sort of glory. We've not really hit the heights that we did under Ralph last season. And I think a change of personnel, probably bringing in McCarthy for Gunn, bringing in Shea Adams to give them more pace up front will do something to the world of good. I think that the next two games we have, obviously both being Man City away, aren't going to define our season. But my worry is, if you look at teams that have generally been on the end of these drubbings, you know, we put 8 past Sunderland a few years ago, Ipswich were on the end of a hammering, weren't they, a few years back, that don't seem to stay up. My worry is what it does to the players mentally. But that said, it's still relatively early in the season. We've had some very, very difficult games in our first 8 or 9 fixtures, and there's still plenty of time for us to pull this back.
And I'm sure we both appreciate that. I guess there could be 2 or 4 very different lineups for the two games that we've got coming up in the next week. What is it Southampton have got to do against Manchester City? Let's take the Carabao Cup first, if you like. Clearly, you know, City are going to make changes. We're playing in 4 competitions, so we've been talking earlier on in the show about rotation and so on. We're clearly going to try a few of the kids, a bit of rotation coming in. But what have Southampton got to do to beat Man City in the Carabao Cup tomorrow night?
We've got to take our chances. If you look at our XG, which is, you know, you can have a lot of cynicism towards it, but it does tell a story. We're very, very poor at finishing chances. We've until recently, we've been creating chances at a Europa League, possibly Champions League rate, but we're just terrible at finishing. You know, we need 7 or 8 chances to score 1 goal. We need to be more clinical in front of goal. And at the same time, we need to be absolutely ruthless at the back. If you look at how we defend the number of chances we give away. We've been saved on this season, probably, I think, at least six goals by VAR. VAR has been our best, most consistent defender this season. and so I think the problem is, in all honesty, if you, what you're asking is what we need more, we need better forwards, we need a better defence, and we need a more effective midfield. So you're essentially saying we need a whole new team, and we ain't going to get that between now and Saturday.
Well, Christmas is coming up. I know of your wish list, Tom. You seem like there's quite a lot on. I don't know if Southampton have been good this year, whether they'll get their wish list or not. But has the result on Friday night, has that changed their outlook in the Cup now? Because we had Jason Dodd on the Southampton fan show last week, and he said that Southampton, make no mistake about it, are in a relegation battle. And, you know, obviously, if we're going off Friday, do they just have to put all their eggs in the league game and try to get something there and really forego the Carabao Cup? Or, you know, with a couple of the heavyweights being drawn to face each other in the Carabao Cup, if they can get past City and City rotate, it's a great chance for silverware. Where do you stand on it all, Tom?
Well, I'm 37 years old. Southampton have won one tournament in the modern era, which was the FA Cup in 1976. My mum and dad were there. I was at Wembley to see us lose 3-2 against Man United. I think the Premier League, for all its merits, for the overwhelming majority of fans, it represents not that much joy, to be frank, anymore. Yeah, Liverpool, Man City are playing a different game to everyone else. If you said to me, you know, the chance to watch Southampton win something probably might never happen in my lifetime, or the chance to see them play another season in the Premier League, another season where they go and get tonked, you know, 7-8-0 by Liverpool, 7-8-0 by Man City, I'd happily take them win something. And I think the majority of Saints fans, of definitely Saints fans of a certain age, would feel the same.
So you take qualification in the Carabao Cup over points on the weekend?
Oh no, I definitely wouldn't take that. Apologies. Well, I mean, I'd take a winning the Carabao Cup over staying in the Premier League. But realistically, if we could get 3 points on Saturday, you know, it would give a whole new look to Saints season and a whole new impetus. But I think the odds on both those things happening are fairly slim right now.
And if it is going to happen, where do you see the weakness in Manchester City? Can you? I'm just interested, fascinated as an opponent's view here. What do you see in the City makeup? Where do you see being any potential flaws that Ralph and his team might just capitalise upon?
Well, the centre backs still look. John Stones still looks a bit ropey. They've not been the same sort of support has been out. But that said, the problem you have is, you know, we're talking about a second string Man City team that on the bench will probably still have Sterling, De Bruyne, Aguero. So even if this game does start to turn against them, they can still bring on, you know, the best part of probably £500 million worth of football talent. We've just got to hope that we can keep it, you know, we do all the things we haven't done this season, keep it tight at the back, keep it ruthless up front and hope for a little bit of luck. You know, I think we're going to need a lot of luck to get anything tomorrow night and probably on Saturday.
Well, Tom, before I ask Nigel and Sarah, can you give us a score prediction for both those games, even though the lineups will change heavily?
I think we'll lose 2-1 tomorrow night, and I think we'll lose 3-0 on Saturday.
Oh, Tom, no optimism there, but we appreciate you coming on. A real pleasure to speak to you. Tom Parker there of the Saints FC podcast. Relegation, chance of silverware. I felt quite emotional hearing him talk when he said, you know, 37, he just wants to see a trophy.
Tom needs to keep the faith. I remember the days when I used to dream of City winning just a League Cup before I died. And we've won a few more than that. So keep the faith, Tom. You never know.
You never know what happens. We obviously heard his predictions as well. He's not predicting much. I have to turn my attentions to you, Nigel. How do you see those games going, and what's your prediction for both?
I think big changes for City, particularly for the Carabao Cup game. I think we'll probably concede. I'm going 3-1 for the Carabao Cup, and I'm going 4-0 for the league game.
4-0 for the league game. It's just adding, that would be 13 goals conceded for Saints and 0 scored in 2 games. Not a good time for them, Tom. But keep the faith, keep your chin up. Sarah, what are you saying?
Well, yeah, I was going to give the same scores as Nigel, but I'm going to adapt them just to provoke a bit of difference. So I'm going to go 4-1 tomorrow night in the Carabao Cup, and I'm going to go 5-0 on Saturday.
4-1 and 5-0. Either way, the five-star showings continue for City and the thrashings continue for Southampton. But either way, whichever way the results go, we will be here to discuss them on next week's Manchester City Fan Show right here on Love Sport Radio every Monday, 9 to 10, with Nigel Rothband, me, Charlie Hawkins and Sarah Messenger. And as always, you won't want to be anywhere else because this is everything where City are concerned and City only.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.